Your Steve Jones Show podcast audio is loading. Steve Jones Show podcast sponsored by Kratzer Insurance Agency, Mount Pleasant Mills in Northumberland, and online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour today. You're saying, wait a minute, it's only 4:06. Why the final half hour? Because at the bottom of the hour, it's off to the Bryce Jordan Center for the Big Ten opener today. Penn State and Michigan State at the Bryce Jordan Center. Michigan State 11-1, ranked fifth in the nation. A lot of people feel they are a Final Four contender this year, and they are as healthy as they've been all year. Only Matt Costello may see a little bit of playing time today, but everybody else is healthy enough and set to go. Brandon Dawson did not play against New Orleans. He got kicked in the shin on Friday, but he is ready to play in today's game. Expect him to be in Tom Izzo's starting lineup. There had been some talk at some point, as I mentioned earlier in the show, that this game would be switched out to the Staples Center in Los Angeles and played there, and then Penn State would have played Michigan State here February 6th, which all would have been a win-win for Penn State. You know, get out of here. There's nobody really around here. Play the game at a major venue where the Lakers and the Clippers play, as well as the LA Kings. The Rose Bowl, of course, is tomorrow. That's where Michigan State is. Their fans could have gone. And many have wondered why that didn't happen. Well, it was proposed and on the table, but in the end, it was Tom Izzo that killed it. And the reason he killed it was as follows. He looked at the schedule, and he realized that if he had switched out the February 6th game, Michigan State would have had to play four consecutive games on the road in the conference. And no coach wants to do that. I know when I looked at it about a month ago, and it was, about 3 weeks ago, 3-4 weeks ago it was brought up. So I looked at it, but I only looked at it from Penn State's point of view. And I looked at it and saw February 6th, that would give Penn State three consecutive home games. And I did briefly wonder, what it would be for Michigan State. Well, it turns out that for them, it would have been four consecutive road games. In the end, that is what swayed them to not pursue the Staples Center and not put the game there today. So it's at the Jordan Center today, and February 6th will be at Breslin. Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance. Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland, auto, home, life, business insurance. They've served the Valley for more than 50 years. Allow them to take care of your insurance needs. Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. Here in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, where I've been joined in the past by John Bacon, the author of Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football, which, by the way, is a title that Urban Meyer loved. And, John, we welcome you back, and time to talk a little bit reform. Welcome.
Good to be here, of course.
Let's take this in two parts. Because you and I, when we did the TV show, we talked about reform, but we'll do this just in a more casual radio format. And I mentioned to you yesterday when we did this that, Joe Paterno said, hey, look, they ought to rip the thing up, start with page one.
I'm with Joe.
Is that sage advice?
Yes, imagine that. A guy who's been around 45 years might know something about college football, and in fact he did, in part because, as we discussed a bit yesterday, that he knew he was cheating. Everyone always does. And I recall Bo telling me about a conversation he had with Joe Paterno when he said, what do you do? He said, well, at first I would get the evidence and send it to the NCAA. Then I realized after 10 years, they don't do anything. So screw it, basically. Right. And he wouldn't say that, of course, but he had a better mouth than I do. But it's true. I mean, right now they have no interest in catching the bad guys. They really don't. Great line from Mike Monty from the book, Fourth and Long. He said, I know what's going on. You know what's going on. How come they don't know what's going on? I did not have a good answer for that question.
Well, right now they are, and I say, in some parts are good. For example, right now they're negotiators when it comes to contracts, like the TBS-CBS deal.
Right.
Okay, that benefits schools. But they're also marketing people now. So how much did those two interests, which are positives, end up interfering, though, with what we're talking about?
Immensely. And the budget of the NCAA, in the book we talked about this, it's $777 million in 2012. Of that, guess how much goes to enforcement? And the answer is 1%.
100%.
So they used to be 100% enforcement, make sure they're safe, make sure they're students, make sure they're amateurs. Now it's 1% of those things and 99% being a saloon keeper. You cannot be a saloon keeper and a sheriff at the same time and do both jobs equally well. And guess which job, Steve, they do better.
Right.
They're a whole lot better at slinging drinks than they are at actually catching underage drinking, it turns out. They've got no interest in doing it. So right now you've got a built-in conflict of interest, which they cannot get out of, which you see, by the way, dramatically in the case of Penn State.
Right.
The 1 week after the sanctions hit, what do they announce? That the BCS playoff is coming for $477 million for those three games.
Right.
And trust me, they need a Penn State as cover, essentially, for the greed that's coming next.
Right. Well, here's the other part. There have been some stories that we do in, and we call it really our irony segment that we do.
how much time do you have for that?
Yeah, and many times it is said individual, like the kid that was the cross-country runner.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Ran the charity thing. But how often do we see, or the young man at Middle Tennessee State in football, okay, was in the military, where a newspaper report brings to light what the reality is and they have to change their mind. What does that tell us about the inner workings or the lack of connectivity?
The lack of common sense, by the way. I think NCAA stands for no common sense at all. Steve Alford famously got busted for posing with a polo shirt and slacks for sorority girls for their March of Dimes calendar. He was not paid a cent. This is clearly a good cause.
Yeah.
But it's an NCAA violation, so they had to have him sit out a game against Kentucky when Eddie Sutton was still there, and, of course, paying the players openly, and everyone knows this.
Right.
So that, to me, is a bit of the Penn State thing. The sheer hypocrisy of it is amazing. No common sense. But if you go back to the idea of the NCAA as not an enforcement agency but a marketing agency, then all their enforcement is designed to promote the marketing, basically.
Right.
That they only catch enough guys they need to catch to make sure everyone still thinks the game is legit. They're carnival barkers.
Yeah.
A few guys have got to make the ring over the stick to feel like the game is legit. And that's what they do during the investigation. So they'll – your great Jerry Tarkanian line. You got to give it, Steve.
The Jerry Tarkanian line. They are so mad at Kentucky that they put Wichita State on probation. I mean, that was the great line that
they're exactly right, and they're so suspicious of programs we know about, they're going to bench this cross-country runner for running in a March of Dimes or a charity run.
You're right.
It makes no sense at all.
For his brother.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, you've got to be kidding me.
But they're not. And it amazes me, though, they don't have somebody in that building who might be able to tip them off, and you know what? We're going to look really stupid if we do this, because they do it every time. So. But, again, they're not trying to enforce things. They're trying to do enough marketing to make everyone believe the games are on the level, that it's all even and that no one's cheating and so on. So they hammer – and, by the way, if you cooperate with the NCAA, they almost always punish you for doing so.
Yeah.
When USC says, we're a private school, get out of here. No FOIA requests, no anything. Mm-hmm. There's not a hell of a lot the NCAA can do.
Right.
When Penn State says, tell you what, within a week, here's the free report,
right,
they say, thank you very much, and 9 days later, beat you over the head with it.
Right.
It's helping them. No good deed goes unpunished with the NCAA.
Well, look out. Miami certainly did their own in terms of keeping them out of bowl games and so forth. But at the same time, they that took time to do. All right. So if you were to sit down in an advisory role, what would you advise them to do?
First of all, follow Joe's advice, and that is start over. I think what you really need, and this sounds a bit crazy, but this ran on Yahoo Sports about a month ago. It's still buzzing.
Still on the front page of Yahoo Sports.
It is. It's ridiculous, but apparently it's hit a nerve. And that is that you need in football and basketball, college football and basketball are the only two sports in the world. Sorry, pro basketball and football are the only two sports in the world that don't have paid minor leagues to get to the major leagues. Hi-Li has got a minor league.
Right.
Ping pong, table tennis, got a minor league.
Yes, it does.
All right? And only in football and basketball, you got colleges, which came before the NBA, came before the NFL. They had no reason to create their own.
Right.
What you need to really separate these problems is what baseball and hockey have had for a century, viable minor leagues to get to the major leagues if that's the way you want to go. So otherwise, you got one size fits all, one big tube for everybody, and it doesn't work. It's round pegs and square holes. You got too many guys who don't want to be students, who shouldn't be students, who want to get paid. Well, as it now stands, they will still find some place to go. Right. What we need to do is find a place for those guys to go elsewhere. Look, you got the Spikes right here in town.
Yeah.
You don't want to play baseball for Penn, you cover them.
Right.
You don't want to play baseball for Penn State, no problem. Spikes are in the same campus.
Sure.
Go nuts. Here's, you know, a signing bonus. Have a good time.
Look at Tyler Gaffney. Tyler Gaffney, who played here last summer, now is tearing up at Stanford, decided to go back and take another shot at that. All right, Jim Delaney. We talked about this yesterday as well. Brilliant businessman, without question.
No question.
And he said, look, the heck with this. We're not a minor league. You want to leave? It's your life. Do what you want. I'm not going to protect you. Your thoughts on that theory?
I love that theory. And
so
we
do
gotta, we got to call the bluff, basically. And
so do I.
Delaney can do it because he knows the NFL and the NBA want no part of a minor league. Why would they pay money for something they're getting for free right now?
Right.
The way to force them to do so, I think, is bring back an idea that was current from 1905 to 1972, freshman ineligibility, which sounds crazy, but if you don't want to be a student, you will not stick around a year to play a game.
Right.
I give you Kentucky basketball.
Yes.
4 months of whatever is all they ever do.
Right.
And if once you bring that back, if the presidents want us to believe in student-athletes, students first, prove it.
Yeah.
Right? And you know what? Penn State would have no problem with this.
Right.
Michigan, I think, would have no problem with this.
Right.
Northwestern, I know, would have no
problem
with this.
Yeah.
Kentucky basketball would have a huge problem with this. They would not have a basketball team.
Right.
That's fine with me.
Right.
So that'll force, I believe, the NBA and the NFL to create their own leagues. There is the D-League, as you pointed out earlier. And trust me, NFL, $9 billion industry. If the Pittsburgh Pirates can afford, what, three or four minor league teams, the Steelers can afford one.
Yeah, exactly. They tried it once, right around 69-70, the Atlantic Coast Football League. They tried it. And after a couple years, it just they kind of, because of the college football component. Now, let's stay in the 70s.
Ah, nice segue. I'm with you, Jones.
Yeah, okay. There.
This is how the pros do it.
Okay, JB.
Sit back and watch, folks. This is how the pros do it.
73. You were part of that documentary. And as someone who's a Michigan historian, okay, Michigan has its great season. Ohio State has its great season. They play. Dennis Franklin gets hurt fourth quarter. 10-10 tie. Ohio State had gone the year before. The assumption is Michigan's going to go. What made them go with athletic directors deciding? And why is it to this day some of them can't even remember being in the same room?
This is the Big Ten documentary tiebreaker. It's been running, I think, almost every day for all week, basically. It was on Wednesday. I think it's on this weekend as well.
It'll be on all next week.
I'm sure you drop $250,000 in the documentary, you run it for a little while, and
yeah.
as well they should. But they did a great job with this, truly.
Yeah,
you got the background right, of course. Michigan's undefeated, 10-0. Ohio State's 10-0. Number four versus number one. And whoever wins goes to Pasadena. It's got a very good chance at a national title, obviously. The year before, they finally rescinded the rule that you were allowed to repeat Big Ten champions going to the Rose Bowl. That was not true from 48 to 72. You could not repeat. So it's in the backup team oftentimes. That rule is gone. Michigan outplays them pretty significantly in that game. Two kicks at the end that Mike Landry does not make, poor guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 10-10 tie, but as you said, Dennis Franklin, Michigan star quarterback, breaks his collarbone in the fourth quarter. Now, they have no real system set up, not much of one, for this eventuality. Consider this today with all the money at stake and all the prestige. And by the way, back then, the Big Two and the Little Eight, this is going to happen fairly often.
Sure.
And those games are all defense, man. They're not 45-38.
Right.
So you got to believe the odds of a tie are pretty decent
on
the grand scale. They're not ready for any of this. They decide to put it to the Big Ten athletic directors. But my question in the documentary was, what question did you ask them? Who deserves to go based on who went last year? Who played the better game that night, which is probably Michigan? Who's got the better chance of beating USC in the Rose Bowl? And don't forget, the Big Ten had lost four straight, all Michigan and Ohio State, to that point.
Who asked the question?
That's another question. And the catch to the whole thing, man, there's a slip of paper somewhere where these guys all voted, and they wrote it down in Chicago at the Big Ten offices. It's all secret. I assume Wayne Duke asked the question. We don't even know that.
Right.
We don't know how anybody voted for sure, or not really. We don't know certainly what the criteria was, what the question even was. And as I said in that documentary, man, you want to breed paranoia? Give us secrecy. And look, the free report and the Knight Commission and you name it with you guys, the more secret you are, the more paranoia grows. And there's a ton of paranoia in Ann Arbor over this game. The conspiracy theorists, by the way, the JFK assassination, 50 years a day, of course.
Yeah.
Man, it's about neck and neck as far as conspiracy theories go. Yeah. I mean, obviously one's seriously important, one is not. But the conspiracy theorists have had 40 years to have fun with this.
But what does it say that even Woody Hayes was surprised by the decision?
That's where my take at the time, and I was a 10-year-old kid, when you see Woody Hayes passing desperately at the end of the game to try to break that tie, that to me is a tacit admission. It's like running from the scene of the crime.
Right.
Why are you running?
Yeah, yeah, because he knows, he thinks he has to win to get there.
Exactly. If he thinks a tie does it, he takes a knee. There's a minute left.
He pulls the Coley O'Brien. Right?
So, nicely done.
So, I mean, that's exactly, for the uninitiated, that was Michigan State Notre Dame 66-10-10 tie when diabetic Coley O'Brien can't really see well. Terry Hanratty's hurt, and Ara Parsegan knows that, hey, look, they run this thing out. They're still going to give it to us.
Exactly right. And he was proven correct.
Yes.
Woody Hayes did not believe that. So he's launching the ball there at the end. The Buckeye players, Woody Hayes, all thought it was going to be Michigan. And Michigan, of course, thought that too. The Ohio State locker room was somber. Michigan's was celebratory. But 24 hours later, different story.
Completely different. For Bo Schembechler, how bitter did he remain about that? And did it change his approach in any way, shape, or form because of it?
Nice follow-up. This is why I always enjoy talking to Steve Jones. The first part, no question. Bo was surprisingly good at not holding grudges, which, trust me, is a surprise. The guy's got a temper, a great memory. Combine those, you figure grudge-o-matic. But not really. With two glorious exceptions. One, the Phantom Fumble in the 79 Rose Bowl.
Yes.
He had that framed. Of course, White himself dropping the ball on the 5-yard line. Yeah. That was framed on his wall in his office his last year of his life. Mm. Number two was this 6-4 vote against Michigan. To send Ohio State, and the ones that aggravated him the most were the Michigan State AD, who played hockey at Michigan.
Yes.
Sister school, tax dollars at the time, going to both schools about equally. And Elroy Hirsch, the Wisconsin AD, who played football at Michigan as well. And I got to tell you a story that I thought for sure they're going to run in this thing, but they got to make cuts. But the last year of Bo's life, he and I were doing Bo's Lasting Lessons, his last book. And I'm talking to him every Tuesday for about a year and a half. Great. I mean, imagine, well, you had Joe Paterno that long, but for writing up Joe Paterno 4 hours on a Tuesday for a year and a half is a great treat. Yep. But he's getting old. He's 77, not great health, so he gets a little tired in the afternoon. All they ever had to do to wake him up for the afternoon was say, hey, whatever happened to that thing back in 73, some tie and some vote? What was it? Two fists on the table, bam. Let me tell you something about those no-account sons of bitches.
Yeah. I can hear him saying
I'm telling you right now, Steve, that was better than a pot of coffee. I got Bo at full power for 2 hours, man. It was tremendous. And another story I knew they had to cut. When a certain AD, I'll leave him nameless, shows up to congratulate Bo about 10 years later. 10 years, Steve, about a big win that Michigan had over them. Came down to congratulate him. Bo remembered the vote. The guy shows up, and they ask him back to Bo, who's in the shower, showering up after the game. He says, Bo, so-and-so is here to see you. He looks over, sees him, turns his back in the shower, continues to scrub himself, drops his bar of soap.
Well, there's a statement unto itself.
I think so. Bends over very slowly to retrieve the soap, gets up very slowly as well, continues to bathe and with his back towards the guest in question. That was his only comment on the situation. So the answer to your question, Steve, is yes. Hell yes, he held a grudge. How did it change him? After that, you watch the tapes. Michigan was still very conservative, but they started loosening things up with the playbook and in general because they knew damn well we are not having this thing come down to a vote again. Now, they changed the rules anyway. But Bo, after that, man, was convinced. Look, man, as you guys, how many undefeated seasons do you have under Paterno?
Yeah.
And get robbed of a national title.
That's John Bacon. Always a pleasure to talk with John. One of my favorites and a great historian on the Big Ten and also on Michigan football. Also, he explained that Bo was very much in favor of Penn State joining the Big Ten, thought Penn State was an awesome addition to the Big Ten. But one of the reasons Michigan voted against it was how it came about and how surprised everyone was by how it came about.
It was all done on the presidential level. That's why they voted no, not because they were anti-Penn State, because Bo was a big Penn State guy. I thought they were a perfect fit and, of course, a big fan of Joe Paterno. Today, it is Penn State, Michigan State, Big Ten opener. Jordan Zetter coming up in just a few minutes. Dick Girardi will join me for that. Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. From the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On behalf of Kevin Herr, the entire staff at News Radio 1070 WKOK, Happy New Year. Talk to you in a few minutes from the BJC.